So the question is, why did I just take so long? I guess, you know, there are a couple answers to that question. Number one, doing it right isn't as cheap as you think it is.
Okay.
And if you're hiring, you know, good editors and good people to work with, you really do have to have money in the bank. And raising money takes time. So that's number one.
Right.
Number two, in the case of this film, was that the story kept changing. I mean, I came into this movie thinking that I was going to be making a film about American political consultants running presidential campaigns in other countries. And originally, I was planning to follow three consultants in three different countries and do parallel narratives. I was very ambitious. But the story in Bolivia just kind of spiraled out of control. It became this incredible story on its own that I never could have predicted, and for that reason alone, you know, our ending kept changing in the cutting room. So when your ending changes in a story, you know, obviously you have to go back and the whole beginning changes, the whole setup changes.
Now, just for those who have not seen it, it has only so far opened at the Film Forum in Manhattan, and it's going to be opening in, I think, something like 15 cities.
Mm-hmm.
Over the next, what, 2, 3, 4 weeks, something like that?
That's right, right. Over the next, actually, it's, I guess the rollout is really over, like, the next 6 weeks.
All right, over the next 6 weeks. Now, just to sum it up, basically, our brand is Crisis, which is being distributed by Koch Lorber, is a behind-the-scenes look at how a U.S. campaign, U.S.-based campaign consultancy, which is called GCS, I believe.
That's right, it's called Greenberg Carville Schrum.
Right. And I'll get into this in a second, but basically it's about how they assisted an older sort of establishment candidate for president in Bolivia, whose name is Gonzalo Sanchez de Lozada, whose nickname is, I've forgotten what that is.
Goni. His nickname was Goni.
Okay. And basically he was a pro-globalization. In other words, he was in favor of outside investment from major corporations in the States and elsewhere. Pro-American candidate, obviously, for engaging and bringing in American money to help revitalize the Bolivian economy. And the idea is that these guys come in to help him get elected because he's in trouble with the local populace, and there's a kind of a wave or a sentiment that they want to keep foreign economy out of Bolivia because they feel nationalistically, culturally threatened by that, which is a correct analysis, I think. But nonetheless, it is a trade-off that does allow for some economic vitality in the country.
Right.
And as you told the New York Times writer Juan Ferrero, I'm much more interested about the consultants as a symbol for us, as a symbol for America and American assumptions. I chose the subjects because I wanted to explore America's relationship with the rest of the world. And basically what happens is these guys come in, it's lots of fun listening to Carville do his shtick. Everybody loves his personality and his nimble intelligence. They got this guy elected, but 14 months later, the country kind of blew up over protests, I guess partly, obviously, about his policies, and he had to leave the country.
Yeah, that's right. True. You know, it's funny because I usually try not to give away the ending, but everybody wants to give away the ending because it's such a great ending.
Yeah.
But he, you know, things really did not turn out as planned for these guys. And, you know, I really was interested from the get-go in looking at the Americans. I mean, I picked these particular consultants because they really were very sincerely idealistic about their job. They really truly believed that they were working for candidates who were going to be spreading good things around the world. And to them, you know, market-based economics, free trade, essentially, is a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's just that, you know, the majority of Bolivians don't see the proof in their pocketbooks. And the free trade policies that have been instituted there really haven't, you know, produced jobs in the way that Bolivians need them.
Because it's going right into the pockets of the upper class and the people with the money and connections, right?
Well, you know, a major problem that is touched on in the movie, but that, you know, the movie doesn't go into deeply, but just, like, if you're going to get into a discussion about what the real problems are, it's corruption. I mean, on deep, deep levels, you know, a place like Bolivia has been struggling with corruption for years. You encounter a police officer in the street, and he can ask you for a payoff to not give you a ticket. You go to the post office, and they could ask you for a payoff to send your package to the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a culture of corruption that's going to take a lot of work to really conquer.
Yeah. I got to ask you the name of the company, just to start off, is very, very basic. It's called GCS, stands for Greenberg Carville Shrum.
Yes.
Now, Shrum, I presume, is in Bob Shrum, right?
That's right. A guy who,
by the way, listeners, is largely credited with having destroyed the campaign of Al Gore for the presidency, because he wrote these eloquent speeches that kind of like had no teeth in them, and people said Al Gore is off in the stratosphere. And he's not a real guy. Bob Shrum is a villain, isn't he?
Bob Shrum?
Yeah.
Well, Bob Shrum, in this film, I included Bob Shrum. For those of you who know what he looks like, you'll see him in the movie, because there's one shot of Bob Shrum, because I cut out all of his scenes.
Oh, why?
Why did I cut him out? Because there were already, I mean, like I said, when I started this film, I had conceived of it as a story about one consultant going to one place.
Right.
And the Greenberg Carville Shrum team, I mean, I filmed no less than five or six consultants going to Bolivia, American consultants going to Bolivia to try and help Goni win the election.
Right.
So Bob Shrum was like the sixth or seventh, and it was just too many characters.
Okay.
I couldn't introduce everybody and make everybody work in the course of the story. But he does have a cameo appearance in a scene where a very funny scene, actually, where Goni is talking to Jeremy on the phone, and he's saying that he feels like he's slapping a bunch of hysterical women in a lifeboat because the campaign's doing so badly.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob Shrum was very much involved. His partner, Shrum had a company called Shrum, Devine, and Donnellan. And his partner was Tad Devine, who is the more prominent of the two in the film. And Tad Devine also worked very much on Gore's campaign and Kerry's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And Tad played a really key role in Goni's campaign in Bolivia.
Right. Okay. Well, Bob Shrum is known for being kind of a clothes horse.
Being a what?
A clothes horse. He's a sartorially distinguished gentleman. You
know? Yes, for sure.
Yeah. The one interesting comment that I was reading in the review, the excellent review that you got in the New York Times yesterday, is that the only thing left to be desired from this momentous documentary is a reference to the size of the consultants' paychecks or their consciences. Leaving aside the consciences, what do consultants earn from a government, from a presidential candidate, when they come in and do a kind of operation like GCS did for Mr. De La Zada?
That's a really, really important and good question. First of all, in this particular case, the consultants were paid for by Goni personally. So it wasn't the people of Bolivia, the coffers of Bolivia, that were paying for the consultants.
Right.
Goni is a very wealthy man. He'd made millions of dollars with a mining business that he had started, which is a controversial thing in and of itself because of Bolivia's relationship with mining historically.
Okay.
They feel like that industry really raped the country. But
yeah.
Goni made millions of dollars off of his mining business and had more than enough to pay the consultants. Now, neither the consultants nor Goni would ever give me an exact figure for how much they were paid. I've heard rumors of lots of different things, but, you know, rumors are just that, they're rumors. Certainly it was, you know, more than $1 million, that's for sure, just looking at the basic costs alone, how many, you know, first-class, last-minute plane tickets were bought, and the hotels they were staying in, and, you know, just the expenses alone were phenomenal. And I believe Carville gets paid something like $50,000 a day. So, you know, I don't know.
I love that.
It's true. I don't know how much they were paid at the end of the day. I can't really speak with any authority.
Yeah.
But I would like to know, too.
I was wondering, in this consultancy, has Mary, Madeline, ever, you would think that she, being an exceptionally shrewd and good campaigner, could contribute, in a very strong way. Do you happen to know whether she has ever helped or worked on campaigns with Carville in this context, in this way, for other governments?
I don't know the answer to that, but it would surprise me if she had,
Yeah.
because they're so politically different that it would surprise me if they had actually worked together on a campaign. I mean,
But she's
one thing
smart,
I
though.
realized
Isn't that
making
the
this
key
film
thing?
is that,
Yeah.
you know, the adrenaline rush of the campaign is sort of universal, and
Yeah.
people who work on campaigns all have sort of this thing in common where they get really excited about politics and really excited about the race. And clearly that's something that Carville and his wife have in common. It's just that the candidates that they tend to back tend to be very different.
Yeah. Can you tell us how many other governments GCS has offered assistance to, and secondly, how many other big time operations like GCS are based in this country? I presume most of them out of DC.
The Greenberg, there's a, first of all, GCS is a company that is actually an umbrella organization that joins together three separate companies. So the three separate companies are Carville Strategy Firm, Shrum Devine and Donilon, which is a media company, and then a company called Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research, which is a polling firm. Now, that polling firm has worked in more than 50 countries, no question. And in some of those countries, it has collaborated with Carville and Shrum. And in some of those countries, it's really worked on its own. American political consultants have worked in almost every country. I mean, from Korea to Colombia, Germany, England, South Africa, Nigeria, Japan, you name it, they've been there. In terms of how many firms there are like this, that's a very difficult question to answer because, and I'm not sure that such a figure really exists because they're all different sizes of political consulting firms, you know. There's the guy who hangs a shingle and, you know, in New York or something and might get hired to go to, say, the Dominican Republic or something and run an election there. And then there are much larger firms like GCS, and they're very hard to track. I don't think there are any figures on that available.
I think it was
One
just
thing I would like to say about the film, though,
Yes.
just that, you know, I really wanted this film to feel like an adventure story, and you know, we worked very hard in the cutting room to try and structure it in a way that it's a really suspenseful ride, and that at the same time you're getting this crazily intimate access to these back rooms that normally you would never be allowed to see, these sort of secret strategy meetings that happen all the time in America, but that, you know, normally we're never allowed access to. So I hope that the film works as kind of like a political thriller, where you feel like you have access to something intimate and secret, and at the same time, you're sort of left on the edge of your seat wondering what will happen, depending on how much you know about what happened, because of course it's already happened.
You know, it's a shame that the type of film that you have made here and that the War Room was when that came out in 90, what was that,
92.
92. And I mean, they're all. I mean, and you know what? One of my favorite campaign films, or inside of campaign films, is that one that was about the campaign between the one in Virginia. You know what I'm talking about?
The one in Virginia. Oh, you mean The Perfect Candidate?
Yes.
Yeah, it's actually called A Perfect
A
Candidate.
Perfect Candidate. Yeah,
Yeah, that's a
that was
great film.
splendid.
It's about Oliver North.
Oliver North. And I just, you know, I could eat these things up, and I just think that they
I'm
are good
glad.
thrillers.
Thank you. Thank you for
Yeah.
eating it up.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I just, it's a shame that I don't know, somehow that there weren't more of these done. I mean, one of the first of its type, as I recall, is There's, you know, I guess the what the making of the president, 1960, the based on the
There's
1900.
the you're probably thinking of primary.
Yeah, primary
Yeah.
about the West Virginia. But wasn't that
Yeah,
it?
I think
Or
that
no,
was a
Wisconsin,
made by
Wisconsin.
Leacock, wasn't it, primary? I have a copy somewhere. It's I don't want to give the wrong person credit, but it was I feel like it was made by Leacock and
Okay.
somebody else.
That sounds like a
Don't quote me on
Mandel
that
thing, primary, but
though. But yeah, no, that was that, you know, documentaries have gone through a whole history where as cameras have gotten lighter, people have been able to follow stories more intimately, you know, and record sound on site. And so Primary was really one of the first films to do that with politics, follow a race through from beginning to end with a portable camera and portable sound equipment.
You know, it's funny. In reading the Denby review, I'm going to include a link for the Denby review in
Okay.
my piece that I do. But it's another quite good review, and he also mentions another fascinating campaign film, which is called Street Fight. Have you heard about this one?
Yeah, Street Fight is
Or have you seen it, for that matter?
it's, you know, Street Fight in my film, it's interesting. I've heard a lot of comparisons recently of my film and Street Fight, and I think that they do have a lot in common in terms of, you know, the exploration of sort of the dirty side of politics. That said, I think, you know, I hope that my film is a film about, like you read from my quote in the New York Times, but I really do hope that my film is a film about America's relationship to the rest of the world. Because while it's about backroom politics and it's about campaigns and how things work here, it's also about, it raises, I think, a lot of really important questions about our relationship with the rest of the world. We talk a lot now about wanting to spread democracy overseas. And so I think it's really important that we, you know, ask ourselves some serious questions about what exactly are we spreading when we go someplace else.
Well, I've been overseas a lot. You've probably been overseas a lot, in addition to your obviously work in South America. But you know, as we all know, America doesn't spread democracy. America spreads McDonald's outlets. That's what you see, you know. And what that is a ruination in a sense. And I weep every time I see it. Of more and more McDonald's and more multinational fast food outlets, and the general sameness of urban life, which is why you're so one feels so grateful that Europe has resisted this more than this country has. But that's what's happening. I mean, you know, everything is the same. That's what's going on, right?
Well, I certainly think that, you know, there the link between democracy and market economics or capitalism, in terms of how we think of them, is very strong. And that, I think when George Bush says that he's spreading democracy to the Middle East, I think he believes in what he's saying. I think he really believes that he's spreading democracy in the Middle East. That said, I mean, I think the film points out or raises some really important questions about, you know, just because you have an election, does that mean that you have a democracy? And, you know, you're asking a really good question. Is what we're spreading really ultimately just McDonald's? You
Well,
be the judge.
I'm sure there's a good representation of Burger King also. I've seen it in Paris. I mean,
Yeah.
there's you know, there's,
But it's, you know, it's funny because in making this film,
Yeah.
You know, it was really, it brings up a lot of issues, a lot of issues about, like, you know, what does it mean to listen to the people? How much should a leader listen to the people? The notion of arrogance in politics and what is arrogance? And I really tried to do it in a way that was not judgmental. I mean, I
That's what's
think
good about your
don't
film, Rachel. I want to just say that is what is so fascinating, because you're right on the edge. You're clearly not making you know, any kind of sharp judgments about the morality or immorality of what we're seeing here. That's what pulls you in, I think.
Well, thank you, because I feel very strongly that I'm not trying to tell people what to think with this film, and so I'm reticent to sort of get up on a soapbox and, you know, sort of tell people how they should be interpreting this movie, because I really feel very strongly that it's a movie that's putting a lot out there and hopefully doing it in a really gripping and exciting way. I mean, the movie opens with these bloody riots, you know, and it's a pretty thrilling ride, and I hope that people watch it and are thrilled by it, but simultaneously come out asking themselves serious questions and coming up with their own answers and judgments. You know, I don't want to be telling people what they should be thinking.
Hey, how has you? I'm sure you've been keeping tabs on the situation. There's the leader of Bolivia's coca growers, whose name is Evo Morales.
Yeah,
was elected. He is in your film, but he was elected finally to the Bolivian presidency. I believe it was just last December, right?
Yeah, you know, the election that I followed was in 2002. Mm-hmm. And the story really goes up until 2004. Evo was elected in December of 2005 mm-hmm. with 54% of the vote. Now that's astounding because of the way the Bolivian political system runs. In that election, there were 8 candidates vying for the presidency. So to be elected with 54% of the vote when you're running against 7 other candidates is a significant achievement.
Right.
And I basically think that it shows how much the Bolivian people really are desperate for something different.
Mm-hmm.
And how desperate they are for change.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure, you know, I haven't been in Bolivia recently, and I haven't, you know, looked at poll numbers or figures or listened to poll presentations or focus groups or interviews, so I don't know what people on the street are thinking right now, but it seems to me that it's not really a question of ideology. It's not really about globalization or anti-globalization. It's fundamentally about people wanting jobs. And people wanting their kids to be educated, and people wanting enough food on their table. You know, people in Bolivia have very basic needs, and those very basic needs are not being met. And so I don't think that they're voting for, like, the anti-globalization candidate because of some principle. They're voting for this guy because he's never been in power before, and all the people who have been in power before have really screwed them.
Yeah. Now, when you read that he is a rep of the coca growers down there, not to get too much into the local aspect of it,
right.
But I presume that what they want to do is continue to grow their product and reap the benefits from the cocaine industry. Isn't that basically what they're in favor of?
Honestly, you would have to ask Evo about what his intentions are on that front. The whole question of coca in that country is very, very complicated, because coca is, first of all, it's a traditional product. I mean, people chew coca all the time. Coca leaves, not cocaine.
Yeah.
The leaf is the raw form, and it has to go through, I don't know how many processes to become cocaine.
Did you ever, by the way, in the course of all your visits, ever chew coca leaf?
I never chewed coca leaf. It didn't look very appealing to me, but I did drink coca tea all the time.
And what's that like?
It's not. It doesn't do. It's like it does probably as much as like a strong dose of aspirin would do.
Okay.
It's really not.
Right.
It might give, or maybe a lot of caffeine.
Yeah.
Is
the chewing of the leaves supposed to give you some sort of rush or some sort of?
It's not like cocaine. I mean, cocaine is kind of like it's the concentrated form of the drug.
Okay.
Coca leaf, it just. Well, I'll give you an example. The capital of La Paz is 10,000 feet above sea level. So it's very, very high up. And the altitude is serious and something to... It's a real factor when you're on a film shoot because you get lightheaded very easily and you start panting when you go up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
And to sort of counteract the effects of the altitude, I used to drink a lot of coca tea because it's the one thing that would, like, clear my head. So I can definitely give a big plug to coca tea when you're in high altitudes.
Yeah. Funny, that same thing happens the first time I go to the Sundance Film Festival every single year. For the first day, you can feel it, and then you adjust very quickly. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What else have I not said that I should say?
Well, I just think that I'd like to know about just what perspective you gained when you were down there about what other countries have had significant U.S. political consultancy input in their races in just in South America alone. Did you get any information about that?
Let's see, where have they worked? American political consultants. I can list some of them. I may be missing a few.
Yeah.
Have worked in Venezuela and Brazil
Right.
and Peru
Okay.
and Colombia, Ecuador, Mexico, maybe El Salvador, I'm not sure.
And
Chile.
right.
Where else?
And by and large
One's off
had
the top of my head.
by and
Hey,
large has
hurt
their
my head.
consultancy has their input resulted in successful in
You
the
know, I don't think that there's that you really can't track because, first of all, American consultants don't generally make it public when they're working for a candidate, so that you really can't know. And if they work for a candidate and they don't win, they don't go around shouting about it. So I would say though that you know, this isn't American political consultants spreading their brand of electioneering overseas is not a new thing. And they have taught, essentially, when they go someplace and they work there, they work with local campaign people. And they teach local campaign people how to do this. And so now, you know, there are lots of locals who can do the same thing. It's not like they necessarily need Americans to come in and teach them anymore. Because Americans have been going around since the fall of the Berlin Wall, when there were all these new democracies sprouting up. They've been going around, you know, teaching people how to do this. And by this, I mean a certain form of, you know, polling and targeted messaging. And there are certain, by the way, I really do think there are certain good aspects. I mean, you can say that the pollsters, they go out to the middle of nowhere, and they do focus groups with campesinos who the people in power have never listened to, ever. And they go out there and they ask them questions about what they think. And they come back and they tell the leaders what the people think. And that's kind of amazing in situations where the people have literally never been given a voice. You know, so I'm not convinced that just in and of itself focus groups or polling, that's a bad thing. I think it can be a very good thing. But the question becomes, what exactly are you testing? And how is the leader responding to what the leader's hearing, you know?
Now, Rachel, your film has been, I believe, nominated by the for an IFC Spirit Award, and you'll be in Los Angeles later today, is it?
Actually, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Is
All right.
today Thursday, according to how we're talking?
Is today Thursday?
I'll be there on Thursday.
Okay, fine. Oh, that's right. Today's Wednesday. Sorry,
Today's Wednesday, yeah.
I don't keep track of days,
No,
basically.
it's earlier for you than it is for me. So.
So I hope to see you at the Spirit Awards
I'd love to
sometime.
meet you. I
And
really
I and of
would. And
course.
I so appreciate your time and doing this. And I want to get people excited about this film because I think it's an exciting movie. I hope it's an exciting movie, and I think it really does give people access to something they've never seen before and something that happens all the time in back rooms all across America.
Well, the thing that makes your film good is that as I said, it's very absorbing as you're watching it, but it is definitely, absolutely, and this is the real mark of a good film, it's something that stays with you and does not, it gets stronger and better the more you think about it afterwards,
Thank you.
and that's always
I really, I appreciate that. You know, after a year and a half working in the cutting room, that's pretty gratifying to hear.
One final question. It was your publicist sent me a photo of you.
Oh,
A
okay.
very,
Which one?
very intriguing, I have to say the word sexy photo of
Oh,
you
dear.
taken by a photographer. It looks like a Vanity Fair piece.
Oh, no, it's Matt Mahern's photo.
It's what?
Matt, do you know who Matt Mahern is?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Matt Mahern used to be a music video director,
Okay.
and he's a very good photographer.
Okay.
And my fiance is a feature filmmaker,
Okay.
and he's directing a film called Fur with Nicole Kidman and Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, sure, that's the Bob Burney thing, sure,
Yeah. And I was on set one day, and Matt Mahern, who's a good friend of ours, was taking some photos on set for the movie.
Yep.
And I saw Matt with his camera, and I said, "Hey, Matt, I need a picture. Will you take my picture?"
Mm-hmm.
And he put me up against a piece of plywood,
mm-hmm.
and he took, with no lights, he took this photo, and I don't know what he did to it to make it so great.
Yeah, it's really nice.
There you go. So,
can
work magic with that thing.
Well, it's linked on my site if anybody's interested. But otherwise, I hope to see you Saturday, and best of luck with the film, Rachel.
Thank you so much for your time.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.